Australia hasn't had a recession since 1991. Think about that for a minute, would you? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In New York City today, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Friday, the 6th day of December. Good as always to have you along, everybody. We started this week, if you can remember back that far, with the prospect of an endless trade war. We end the week with a labor market that seems determined not to quit. How to make sense of those two things? Well, that's why we're here, right? Anna Swanson's on today. She covers trade for the New York Times. Sudeep Reddy is at Politico. They are both in our bureau down in Washington, D.C. Hey, everybody.
Hey, Kai.
Hey, Kai.
Sudeep, let me start with you and a very quick pass at the jobs report. We're going to have Mitchell Hartman talking a little bit more about the durability of this economy. But today, 266,000 new jobs. What's not to like?
There isn't a lot that you can be disappointed by in this jobs report. This is really incredible durability, as you mentioned. The fact that we're well into a decade of the expansion mm-hmm. and have the unemployment rate so low, like that is incredibly strong. Wage growth is a little disappointing. That's the one thing that we can keep hoping for. We are seeing a lot of the job gains come in lower paid industries, but we're seeing wage growth higher in some of those low paid industries. So the people who usually have to wait the longest are finally seeing some of the gains due to a tight labor market. So that's the good stuff there.
Right. Which is what Jay Powell says all the time. Now, Anna, come back with me to Monday. President Trump tweeting from London actually says in a statement, he tweeted the steel tariffs. He talked about the endless trade war. He said, look, I'd be fine if we don't get a deal with the Chinese till after Election Day. Make sense of that for me, please.
Well, that's a tall task. So it did seem like the trade war was headed toward more of a resolution here. Obviously, weeks ago, the administration had announced that they had reached a phase one trade deal with China, and the markets reacted really positively to that. But since then, that trade deal hasn't materialized, and the two sides are still grappling over quite a few issues, including how many of the tariffs President Trump is going to roll off. And it's creating a lot of uncertainty for the market. Meanwhile, there's a serious deadline coming up December 15th, which is when President Trump has plans to raise tariffs on a bunch of consumer products imported from China, including smartphones. And we're really not sure whether or not that's going to go into effect. I think the president has really gone to great lengths here to make clear to everyone that he likes tariffs and he wants to be unpredictable. So second-guessing his plans is really difficult.
Well, you know, speaking of second-guessing, Sudeep, Larry Kudlow goes on CNBC this morning, of course, the president's chief trade advisor, and says, oh, no, a China deal is close. There's a little bit of Lucy pulling the football away here in terms of who knows what and who's doing what to whom.
Yeah, this is the endless game that Larry Kudlow and all of his team have to play. And he was very clear that this is the president's decision. The president is guiding all of this, and he is very carefully trying to play a game with markets, trying to play a game with China. This is his way of negotiating to keep pushing and hoping he can keep things together. And when you see numbers like you've seen in the jobs report, when you see numbers like you've seen in the stock market, the president is only emboldened to keep playing the same hand that he's been playing.
I think that's a good point. Yeah. So the downside to this report is that, you know, these strong numbers could actually convince the administration that it can afford to further dig in on its fight with China. And the same thing for the trade data that we saw coming out yesterday. The trade deficit on a monthly basis has started to fall. That's not necessarily a good thing for the economy when both imports and exports are falling, but the administration is interpreting that as a win. And I think that is reinforcing them that, you know, they could continue on this trade war path.
Okay, so Anna, wait, hang on a minute. So just back to the December the 15th tariffs, which is, oh, by the way, a week from Sunday. Spitball it for me. I mean, do you think we get to Saturday night and the president says, oh, no, or do we get to Saturday night and the president says, yep, and signs the tariffs?
Well, my best understanding is administration officials are saying that it really hinges on what China wants to do at this point, that they're still waiting for the Chinese to agree to some of the concessions that they want. The final sticking points are around, you know, how do you put the purchases into writing and how many of the tariffs roll off. And apparently, you know, U.S. advisors are ready to fly to China and finalize a deal if the Chinese are willing to make concessions on some of those points, right. But it's still not really clear. I think a lot of the advisors do not support the idea of these tariffs going into effect, but they say that President Trump is the decider and he's the one who will make that call.
He's going to do what he wants to do. Sudeep, I'm going to change gears here a little bit, prompted by something Kimberly Adams, our Washington correspondent, said in the morning meeting this morning. As we were talking about all this other stuff, she said, oh, by the way, we still don't have a budget, and that spending authority expires on 20 or 21 December, and there's an impeachment going, and we got a trade war going on, and holy cow, people pay attention. Are we going to do like a Christmas Eve budget thing?
It looks like we are. Usually shutdown threats are the Christmas drama. They always happen at the last minute, the last thing before members go out of town. But we have other drama, obviously, impeachment, a House Judiciary Committee vote likely next week and maybe the full House the week after. I don't think lawmakers want to spend a ton of time fighting over whether we're going to have a shutdown at the same time. They have enough vitriol and toxicity in the air, so they don't need something to add to it. But there are these moments that you look at the House and you're like, wait, maybe they are all going to come together and work something out. The House this week did pass legislation related to robocalls, all that super annoying spam that you get on your phone. And I thought, okay, well, like at least something like that. Of course, it was a nearly unanimous vote, but they are able in some cases to come together when things aren't controversial, but almost everything is deeply controversial.
Right?
Exactly.
Deeply, deeply. Sudeep Reddy at Politico and Anna Swanson at the New York Times on this Friday afternoon. Thanks, you two.
Thanks, Kai.
Thank you.
Have a nice weekend. Wall Street on this jobs day? I mean, look, what's not to love, right? Well, except for the endless trade war and the impeachment and the budget and, you know, all that stuff we were just talking about. Details when we do the numbers. All right, as promised, a couple of more minutes now on that jobs report, because A, it was really strong, and B, the September and October reports were revised up, and C, unemployment is back down to a 50-year low. Now, Australia and its 28-year recession-free streak notwithstanding, contrast all the things that are going on in this country with the fact that just a couple of months ago, I and most everybody else out there was using the R word every other sentence. And one might fairly ask, what the heck with this economy? Here we are, 11 years into the longest expansion this economy has ever seen, and we are still going? Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman is on the What the Heck desk today.
A few months ago, recession worry was all the rage, including among economists I talk to all the time.
The risk of a recession was real in the next year. In fact, I thought it was very possible in the middle of next year.
Now, Brad McMillan at Commonwealth Financial Network is giving the economy a tentative all clear ahead. Trade war worries are fading, job growth is rebounding, which in turn is firing up consumer spending that drives two-thirds of the economy, says John Lear at Morning Consult.
Without a doubt, consumers are more optimistic now than 3 months ago, not just about their own personal financial conditions, but also about business conditions.
There's a virtuous cycle from labor market to consumers and back again, says Julia Pollack at ZipRecruiter.
Consumer spending increases have fueled employment growth in leisure and hospitality, for example, as people have felt freer to take vacations or go to restaurants.
But the economic expansion is old now, 10 years and counting. It's got to end sometime, right? Well, Brad McMillan says this expansion has actually had plenty of help, starting with the giant Trump tax cuts in 2017 and a lot of deficit spending.
We were looking at a potential recession when we got the tax cuts, and let's not forget the increase in government spending.
When that stimulus started fading this year, the Fed cut interest rates.
We just saw new home sales go to the highest level since 2007, for example. So there's been a tremendous stimulus coming from the Fed rate cuts. And that may well be what buys us another 6 to 12 months.
Or more? Kurt Long is chief economist at the Association of Federal Credit Unions.
Nothing lasts forever, but I think people are starting to rethink how long an expansion can last. And I see no reason, at least on the immediate horizon, that the expansion cannot continue.
Long says the biggest risks to the economy going forward are trade policy and election year politics. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
The company that kind of upended the old personal safety mantra of never get into a car with a stranger came out with its first comprehensive safety report last night. Over the course of last year, Uber says, in something like 1.3 billion rides in the United States, there were 3,045 sexual assaults, 9 people murdered, and 58 people killed in crashes. Any and all of those are terrible, but just during the time I've been speaking to set up this story, who knows how many more people have gotten in an Uber, because in a straight-up business model sense, this is a market share story. Marketplace's Kimberly Adams has it.
Uber controls roughly 70% of the U.S. rideshare market, and these numbers are unlikely to change that, says Alexandria Ravenel, who wrote the book Hustle and Gig about the gig economy.
I think that Uber has just started to dominate the market in such a way that now we talk about Ubering as opposed to taking a cab. And so I think that we'll still see people using it in very large numbers.
And while this trove of data is highlighting the fact that sexual assault is a problem on the platform, James Hodgson, a mobility analyst at ABI Research, says Uber can use those numbers to tell another story.
In the one case, trying to demonstrate and put out an argument that says, look, actually, when you look at the figures, we are a very safe service relative to other alternatives.
Even though there isn't a ton of data to make that comparison, Uber now has the information to say that reports of sexual assault on its platform dropped 16% in a year. So Uber can argue to regulators,
you know, here's what we're actually doing proactively to make ride-hailing a safer option on the Uber platform.
But strategists like Jason Cieslak at branding and reputation firm Siegel and Gale say these numbers are just going to add fuel to efforts to increase oversight of Uber.
You're going to start seeing that businesses like Uber and other businesses in the gig economy start being held to a higher standard.
Sure enough, today, the chair of the House Transportation Committee, while praising Uber for releasing the data, also called on the company to do more to improve safety on its rides. In Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams for Marketplace.
Coming up,
he was inspired by, you know, those giant inflated gorillas that you see outside of car dealerships.
Happy holidays! But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Industrial is up 337 points today, 1.2%. I frankly would have thought it would have been really happy music, but, you know, whatevs. 28,015. NASDAQ up 85 points, 1%, finished at 86.56. S&P 500 gained 28 points, 0.9%, 31.45. For the 5 days gone by, the Dow off a 0.1%. The NASDAQ gave back the same. S&P 500 went the other way, gained 0.1% today. Uber slowed 2.7%. We told you about that report. Lyft up 0.2%. Today, some of the world's biggest oil producers meeting in Vienna have agreed to cut supply starting March next year. Should help shore up prices, so energy companies got a boost. Valero Energy up 0.6%. ExxonMobil up 1.6% today. Bonds pretty much steady. Yield on the 10-year T-note, 1.84%. You're listening to Marketplace. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts. Mm-hmm. You know that song you heard on Marketplace, the one you really liked? It's an earworm, isn't it? Don't you wish you knew what it was? We've got the whole list of the music we play on the show at our website, marketplace.org/music.
From news to numbers, you count on Marketplace to explain what you need to know. Get Marketplace delivered to your inbox every day and never miss a beat. Subscribe to the newsletter at marketplace.org.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Ryssdal. How busy was Cyber Monday at Amazon? So busy that the company had to put out a statement that said, in relevant part, this: we are off to a record-breaking start to the holiday season, and on peak shopping days, delivery promises vary and may be longer than normal. And for Amazon to have to slow down how quickly its customers are getting what they, which is to say we, want, that's a big deal. That promise, customers first, drives virtually everything Amazon does, and as we all know, it does a lot. And what the company does and what that does to a city, Baltimore, Maryland specifically, was the subject of a long article that Scott Shane had in the New York Times the other day. Scott, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on.
Do me a favor, would you, and set the scene in what you describe as post-industrial Baltimore that kind of opened the door for Amazon to get in there.
Well, Baltimore, like a lot of American cities, has been losing industry for a very long time. It lost a General Motors plant that closed in 2005. It had a big Bethlehem steel plant that closed for good in 2012. And Amazon came along in 2015 looking for space for a warehouse, and that's when they built their first of two.
You live in Baltimore, right?
Yes.
I was struck by one of the things you said early on in this piece, that you kind of have to go looking, but once you do go looking, you can see Amazon's footprint all over that city.
Yeah, that was one of the remarkable things. I think people here, like people everywhere, think of Amazon as basically, you know, you go on the website, you click, and a package comes to your front door. But I was kind of blown away by the Amazon presence at the local airport. Mm-hmm. I was struck by how many companies, government institutions are using AWS, Amazon Web Services, their big cloud computing provider.
Yeah, which is the amazing thing, right? Because that's the part you don't see. You see all this stuff, but then you learn that the city of Baltimore uses AWS, hospitals use it, the football franchise in town, the Ravens, use it. It's amazing.
It's, you know, every NFL player, turns out, has a chip in each shoulder pad. There's a chip in the football. There's a chip on the ref's jersey. And all this stuff are being recorded and sent to AWS for all kinds of, you know, sophisticated data crunching. So that, you know, that's another example of how Amazon is sort of often kind of lurking in the background of many of our daily activities.
Setting aside my riff on how all this data is fundamentally bad for sports, and I know people are going to get on me about that, but there is the bottom line of all of this, right? Whether it's the warehouses or the chips that tell league officials how far the ball traveled or ring or anything, the through line of this, but the subtext of this piece is that the convenience we have become accustomed to as consumers at whatever level comes with a cost. Lay out that cost for me.
I think that's right. I mean, Amazon famously, you know, has a slogan. It wants to be the most customer-centric company in the world. And, you know, I don't think that is just marketing hype. We used to get packages from Amazon in a week. Then it was 2 days. Now it's 1 day. Some places you can get them in an hour or two. But if you are working on that kind of a schedule in a warehouse, or for that matter, at the airport, you're always on the clock. You're being graded and judged. And if you don't meet the numbers in each of those cases, you're basically out of work.
Not to be dystopian about this, but I think somebody in your article said, look, Amazon's only going to get more powerful, right? Because they're getting bigger, they're getting more data, they're getting more equipment, more money, and they're just going to keep growing and doing this.
Yeah, it was very interesting. I went to kind of look at what Jeff Bezos has said about the future of Amazon. I wanted to see if in light of these antitrust concerns that have arisen in Washington, whether maybe he was pulling in his horns a little bit. And quite the contrary, you know, I learned for the first time about this project they have to launch, I think it's 3,200 low orbit satellites to provide broadband internet coverage everywhere. You know, I found a quote from him this year where he says, we're big enough now that we can do big things and take on big challenges and really try to move the needle. So certainly both in terms of its capabilities and its philosophy, Amazon seems very much inclined to get bigger and bigger and reach into more and more areas of the economy and of our lives.
Scott Shane is a reporter in the Washington Bureau for the New York Times, reporting on his hometown, Baltimore, and Amazon, and what that company is doing in that city. Scott, thanks a lot. I appreciate it. Great piece.
You're welcome, Kai.
Shopping this time of year ain't just about the gift giving, you know. The National Retail Federation says Americans plan to spend on average more than $60 on holiday decorations this year. That's up $20 from a decade ago. And judging from the shelf space at places like Lowe's and Home Depot and Walmart and, of course, on Amazon, a lot of that money is being spent on inflatable yard decorations. Marketplace's Amy Scott has this story of how a Texas novelty company basically reinvented holiday decorating and in the process transformed a whole bunch of front lawns.
Robbie Mamula is out of extension cords, and that's a problem because he's got several inflatables left to set up before the big lighting ceremony in a few days.
I put one down yesterday, which was disappointing, but to have
wait,
that clean
you put
number,
one down, does that mean it passed away?
It passed away, yeah. No fan working on this one, so we had to put them down.
The deceased, a life-size Santa holding a beer. This is Mamulaville, the Mamula family's annual extravaganza in the Baltimore suburb of Severn. The front lawn is already crammed with three 15-foot Santas reaching all the way to the second floor. There's an R2-D2 in a Christmas hat, a plush teddy bear that hugs, and at least 30 more. Mamula's inflatable habit started when he and his wife moved here more than a decade ago.
First year I bought my first couple of reindeers, and every year since, I'm that guy that's doing Christmas Eve shopping, but I'm not shopping. I'm looking for inventory of what's going to be on clearance the next day or two after Christmas.
Most of Mamula's collection is made by a Texas company called Jemmy Industries. Before inflatables came along, Jemmy was best known for this guy. An animatronic singing fish on a plaque. Yes, that animatronic fish on a plaque. Big Mouth Billy Bass, a ridiculously popular gag gift back at the turn of the millennium.
Definitely Big Mouth Billy Bass put Jemmy on the map.
That's Stephen Harris, vice president of product development at Jemmy. He says after Big Mouth Billy's success, Jemmy's co-owner Dan Flaherty was looking for another hit.
And he was inspired by, you know, those giant inflated gorillas that you see outside of car dealerships. And his idea was, how do you turn that into something that the residential consumer can decorate with?
Early prototypes were inflated with hair dryers, which would overheat and burn out. So Jemmy patented a fan that could run for months at a time. Regular polyester wouldn't inflate well, so the company worked with fabric mills to develop a special coating.
And then in 2001, we launched the first airblown, which is a Santa Claus. He was actually quite primitive. He had the big triangle of white fabric between his legs to give enough support so that he could stand up.
The designs have come a long way since then. At Jemmy's showroom outside Dallas, Harris flips a switch and dozens of lifeless forms rise from the floor.
Pretty much any vehicle that we can have Santa flying in works. So the hot air balloon, the sleigh, the helicopter.
One of these beauties will cost you anywhere from $15 for a small polar bear to around $200 for a giant Snoopy driving a Zamboni. Jemmy is a private company, so it won't discuss sales, but
it's safe to say we have, you know, 90-95+% market share.
Back at Mamulaville, Robbie Mamula insists his neighbors don't mind their block being invaded by cartoon characters for 2 months every year, not to mention the bright lights and fans and visitor traffic. But his wife?
She does all the inside, so we have a deal. This is trashy because it's obnoxious and we're classy inside.
This year, he's coveting a high-tech inflatable snow globe that plays scenes from National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. But that would set him back another $200. Mamula, a turkey salesman for Butterball? I know, it's too perfect. Guesses he's already spent north of $5,000 over the years, including electric bills.
But it's fun. If you can't walk by, you can't come by Mamulaville and smile, then you're Scrooge. Bah humbug.
There's an inflatable for that, too. A 12-foot pumpkin Scrooge for Halloween goes for about $50. In Severn, Maryland, I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out today from Investopedia, the online financial information site. Its top 10 most clicked terms for the year that is almost done. Number one, negative interest rates. We covered that quite a bit. Number two was dark web, the more nefarious side of the internet. We did that too. Three through six were pretty straight ahead. Number seven, though, Jay-Z. Number eight, Karl Marx. The internet's a weird place, man. All right, we got to go. Dow Industrial's up 337 today, 1.2%. The NASDAQ up 85 points, 1%. S&P 500 gained 28. That is 0.9%. Our theme music was composed by BJ Lederman. Marketplace's executive producer is Nancy Fargali. Deborah Clark is the senior vice president and general manager. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you Monday, everybody, back in L.A. Have yourselves a good weekend, all right? No, wait. Have a great weekend, all right? This is APM. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdal. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.